Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
I'm Ruth Jackson, part of the Unbelievable team, and you are listening to a classic replay programme from the archives. The episode you are about to hear was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 23rd of May 2009. It explores the similarities and differences in beliefs between Buddhists and Christians, with Buddhist Geshe Tashi Tsering and Christian Sunil Shivdasani. You can get in touch with the show and listen to more episodes at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, we're looking at an interfaith discussion today, Buddhism and Christianity. Been a quite a while, actually, since we've had a Buddhist on the programme, so it's my great pleasure to introduce to you today Geshe Tashi Tsering. He's from the Jamyang Buddhist Centre and the creator of the Foundation of Buddhist Thought, and we'll find out all about his story and what he does. Our other guest in the studio with me today, Sunil Shivdasani, from Christian Vision for Men. He's from a Hindu background originally, and we're going to be finding out about his story as well as a Christian believer. This is the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together, and it's a great opportunity to understand more of each other and to also challenge each other with our particular points of view, our particular ways of seeing the world, seeing God, the universe and everything else. And a little later on in the programme, we'll be hearing from Dr. Kang San Tan as well, a former Buddhist actually, but now head of mission studies at Redcliffe College. So hold on for that a little later in the programme. Firstly, a very warm welcome to both my guests today. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
Perhaps Geshe, yeah. As being someone really new to the show, wonderful to have you with me. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're originally, I understand, from Tibet, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I was born in Tibet, and because of the Chinese difficulties, my parents moved to India in 1960. Since then, until 1991, I was in India, and I became monk when I was 13, so I'm a Tibetan Buddhist monk. And I was trained in the monastery for 16 or 17 years. After I finished my monastic education, I came to West, first 3 years in France, and then 1994, I came to UK. So since then, I'm based in London and in a Buddhist centre called Jamyang Buddhist Centre, in South London, just Elephant Castle, around Elephant Castle.
Right. And so when you were growing up, obviously, you I assume, grew up in that Buddhist sort of family.
Yes.
And how do they go about choosing boys to go into the monastery? Mm. That's quite a young age, isn't it?
It is.
To go for that.
It is. Traditionally, the Tibetan families, if they have 2-3 sons, they tend to send at least one son to monastery, because until 1959, the monasteries are the only, I mean, there were very few ordinary schools where you get proper educations. Only monasteries were the places where you get the good educations. So because of that reason, also the 99.9% Tibetans are the Buddhist follower. So they have this strong faith in Buddhism. So because of that, they tend to send at least one of their son to monastery to support that faith.
And what was it like? Obviously, it was a lot of your life, but what would the daily kind of routine be as someone who was being trained in the monastery?
Yes, in my case, I became monk in a mixture of my own sort of, this yearning want to become monk, and also my parents, the desire to want to send me to the monastery. So when I joined the monastery, the first few years, the education was very much, the memorizing the texts, the text which later we'll use for, the studying, meditating, and
would
debating.
These be the writings of the Buddha?
Not necessarily only writings of the Buddha. Mainly, of course, the writings of the Buddha, but also the writings of the great Indian masters like Nagarjuna, because the Tibetan Buddhism is what we call the Mahayana Buddhism. So the Mahayana Buddhism follows one of those great Indian masters like Nagarjuna, Asanga, and around the first, second century in AD, those scholars. So most of the texts we memorize and later we use for debating, to study, and to meditate are the Indian the masters'
right,
texts.
Mm.
And of course, on top of that, Tibetan masters' texts too. So the day start really early morning around 4:30. Going together into temple or the monastery main prayer hall and start with the recitation and the meditation. That will finish around 7:30 and then have the breakfast. Then it depends on which level you are studying. So the younger monks, they go to the memorization section, and the elder one, they go to the debating session. So the it will spend until midday for in classrooms or the debating yard usually, and then we have lunch around 11:30, 12. Then of course South India is very hot in a climate, so we have at least 3-4 hours rest until get cool. Then again, afternoon, early evening, again going to the debating yard to debate with your classmates, your other monks, until 9:30, and then coming back after 9:30 to your own rooms. Then mainly to spend in a private practice and the recitation, so forth.
Right, meditation, etc.
Yeah,
we'll get into the more detail on what that means for you and how you believe you do connect in some way with the divine. It'll be interesting to hear as well, your thoughts on God and how you as a Buddhist see God etc. Our other guest, though, today is in the studio, at least, is Sunil Shivdasani. Sunil, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. Glad to join you.
It's nice to have you back. It's some time back that you were on this program.
Yes, about 18 months ago, I think.
Something like that. You're a Christian.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit, though, about your background, because you didn't start out in a Christian background.
Oh, no. My parents come from a Hindu background. They were born in South Pakistan, and they came over here in 1951 because they were Hindus, that they left India and ended up coming over here. And I did a search for God when I was a young teenager. I wouldn't say really a search, it was more of an experiment with God, really. I was in a church building, and I prayed to the God of the Bible, "I'll follow your Ten Commandments if you look after me." A very simple, sort of childish prayer. But actually, for the next few days, I really sensed a peace which I'd never had before. And then that peace left me. I was very superstitious at the time, and I didn't really explore it further, so I'm not surprised that that peace left me. I did nothing to encourage or nurture it, you could say. And then I became angry with God that he'd let me down. So I think there was some sort of genuine transaction, even in that very simple, childish sort of transaction, you could say. And then between school and university, I decided to search for God. I went to India because I come from a Hindu background, and I went up to some of the holy places, Haridwar, Rishikesh, Banaras, you know, many of these places. And it was very fascinating to discover and to see Hinduism in India. I was looking for spiritual power. I tried transcendental meditation, and I did have certain experiences in that. But I realized there was something that didn't quite add up about it all. It was as if there was a blanket over my whole personality, not only cutting off the bad, but cutting off the good as well. And I realized that, you know, this didn't seem consistent with what I was expecting of God. So I renounced that and went on my way. I met a Christian, and he told me about his faith in Jesus. And I said, well, I'm glad you found what you're looking for, but, you know, I'm a Hindu, thank you very much, as one does. And slightly patronizing, I guess, if I look back on it now. But then I realized over time that actually I did want to know God, but it was very much on my own terms. And I was actually only looking within the one faith, within Hinduism. And if God was to be found there, then I was looking. But if it was outside that, then, you know, I wasn't interested. And as I thought about that and reflected on that, I realized that that was really inappropriate. You know, if we come to God, it must be on his terms and not on ours. If I get a letter from the Queen to invite me to the garden party, I can't say, sorry, I can only make it Tuesdays 10:30 to 4:30, thank you very much. You come on their terms. How much more the one who made us? And so I sort of, as I was walking home one evening, as I was lying in bed actually on that occasion, I prayed to God that, you know, I'd want to know him on his terms. And it was a genuine prayer. And so in that sense, I opened myself up to the God, even to the God of the Bible, you could argue. But again, things didn't completely add up until I asked Jesus into my life. And I was walking home one evening, and to be honest, I was quite concerned that I was losing friends because I used to be very sarcastic. And I could control my tongue 60, 70, 80%, but there are times I'd be so nasty to people who are nice to me, and I'd feel gutted afterwards, and I knew this was wrong. And so I said, look, let me try praying to Jesus. What have I got to lose? So I said, Jesus, I don't know if you are God or not, but if you are God, well, I should be following you because you're God. I know I'm doing wrong. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And if you're God, you'll be my God. A very simple sort of heart prayer, very honest prayer. Nobody told me what or what not to pray. And so I went to bed that night. And as I slept, I really sensed the presence of Jesus in the room with me in a very real way. It was almost tangible. And from then on, I knew that when I die, I'd be with Jesus forever. Nobody had told me that Jesus died for my sins or the message of Christianity. I didn't know what it was. And indeed, when I discovered that Jesus rose from the dead a few weeks later, I didn't believe it. And yet throughout those 6 weeks in that intervening period, and from then on, I had a real sense of the presence of Jesus and presence of God in my life in a way that I'd never had before. So very tangible. Mm. And I began to change from the inside out.
So. And so the story continued from there, I guess. And
yes, I mean, I did review things a year later and said, am I being sensible or stupid? Is this blind faith, whatever? Yeah. But as I prayed, I came back to the God of the Bible. And, I've not really looked back. Yes.
Well, it's two very different stories, if you like, but two fascinating ones. And I'm sure it'll be interesting to comment on each other's approaches to faith and the journeys that we've had. You're listening to Unbelievable. My guest today, Geshe Tashi Sering of the Jamyang Buddhist Centre, and Sunil Shivdasani.
No problem.
Tongue twister in some ways, but Sunil Shivdasani is here telling us his story of faith. And we're going to have a dialogue in the course of the programme today, finding what are the meeting points between Buddhism and Christianity, but also what the differences are in regard to how we view God, salvation, and what our religion actually does for us. So I'm sure you'll be interested to listen through today as we continue on the programme. Do hope you can stay with us through to the end. And don't forget, we're online at premier.org.uk/unbelievable if you'd like to listen back to this programme or share it with a friend. That's more than possible. We'll be back in a couple of moments' time here on the programme.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
We We're talking Buddhism and Christianity on the show this afternoon. We've really got the opportunity to understand each other better this afternoon as we hear from Geshe Tashi Sering of the Jamyang Buddhist Center and also from Sunil Shiv Tasani as he brings a Christian perspective to our discussion today. So we'll get into it now, gentlemen, because two stories, both of genuine searches for faith and understanding the universe, God, etc. I mean, first of all, it might be worth just nailing down a little bit what we actually mean when we say God. I mean, would a Buddhist Geshe Tashi actually use the word God or not?
The term is use God, but not in a sense of eternal God. Because in Buddhism, particularly in the Mahayana Buddhism, there is a concept of there are many great beings. So in that sense, sometimes people tend to use that term God, but that is definitely not as a similar concept as God.
Not an eternal creator, right?
Like a supernature, not in that sense.
But would when people do talk about the supreme beings or gods, would they be supernatural in some sense?
No. So in Buddhism, you know, the concept of those great beings are like this. You know, initially, those great beings are like us.
Right.
You know, have all the difficulties, have all the challenges, have all the, you know, the what we have. But through the practice, through the training, through the mainly to really dealing with the attachment, aversion, ignorance, and so on and so forth, dealing with them and, you know, purifying, if you use the word, or the, you know, the transforming, you know, those unhealthy mental states through the meditation, through the training, then when those people, you know, people who are able to transform their attachment, aversion, ignorance, jealousy, and so on and so forth into like a love, compassion, understanding, you know, patience, those beings are called great beings in Buddhism.
And for a Buddhist, this is then the goal is to undergo that process of change whereby you...
Yes, that is the main aim in Buddhism, really training yourself, training your mind, transforming your mind, you know, from this, you know, very confused, very, you know, the unhealthy in the sense of attachment, aversion, those, you know, the unhealthy mental states transforming into healthy mental states.
And that's very much then an internal thing. It's not something where there's, as it would be in Christianity, a God beyond us who is helping us. It's much more about doing it yourself in your own mind.
It is very much in the one's own training, one's own mind, with the help of those teachers like Buddha or the subsequently
right.
those great teachers who had been same as ourselves, you know, had similar problems like we had, but through the training, who are able to transform their mind and through their experience give the teachings and the trainings. Of course, there's that sort of help is there, like when we say that, you know, receiving teachings from the Buddha. The main job or the main help of what Buddha can do, teaches. That's what we're talking about.
It's fascinating, Sunil. I mean,
yes.
What do you make of that and well, how different, obviously it is different,
yes,
but
yes.
How different is that to the Christian approach?
Well, very much, I mean, as you were alluding to, my understanding from the God of the Bible is he's very much third party, as we describe it. He's outside of ourselves. So I still remember when my father died a number of years ago, I really found God's help to face some of the situations I was in. And I met another friend who'd faced a similar situation, and he'd looked to his own resources. And as we were talking, I suddenly realized how limited his resources were, because he was going to a human resources, albeit, you know, a very capable man. They were limited compared to the vast resources of the one who made us. And so by going to the one who made us, we've got access to a much greater resource. It's a bit like, do I use my own home library or do I use the library of, you know, of the universe, shall we say? the library of the universe is much, much greater. And in a greater way, the one who made us, who knows who we are and how we are made, etc., has got the resource, far greater resources to help us and enable us to live our lives.
What do you say to that, Geshe Tashi? Because I suppose ultimately you don't actually believe in this, a supernatural God.
No.
You only believe in us.
I think here is not really the point what I'm going to make. It's not scoring points or something like that.
No.
It is really very much, the concept of believing there is some kind of supernature being up there who has all the solutions. It's very much, asking, somebody to do the job for oneself. And that's really something from the Buddhist point of view, that train, to whatever difficulty we want to overcome, at the end of the day, it comes up to oneself. Not somebody will do for you. Of course, like, Jesus or the Buddha, they will give you the path or show you the path. At the end of the day, it is you. So I think, the believing there's some kind of supernature being there, eternally he or she might be completely, had all the solution what we need, is almost asking.
You feel like it's almost letting us off the hook of changing ourselves and becoming a better person if you've got a sort of divine person who'll get you out of all your difficulties.
One sense, I was going to say actually that what's very commendable about Buddhism is it does train you in terms of self-discipline, etc. So it does in that sense enable a human being to maximise their human potential as a person, but it is within the limits of that human being. We've got a young son who's 7 years old. When he was very small, we had to feed him because he couldn't feed himself. He got himself into a mess sometimes, and he depended on his mother, actually, to go beyond what he himself could do. And I don't think the God of the Bible would want us to live less than we are. We should maximise our potential as people, and we should work hard to achieve that goal. And so in that sense, it's not a cop-out, and it shouldn't be a cop-out in any way, but rather to extend beyond what we can do. At the end of the day, when the Big Bang happened, something caused it to happen outside of the Big Bang. You can't create nothing out of nothing. Something created something out of the nothing. Mm. The Creator can do that. Ultimately, if I'm going to rise to a challenge of a higher authority over my life, there's got to be somebody who's above me that says, Sunil, I'm calling you up to a higher standard. And only the ultimate judge of our lives, God himself, can set such a standard. Because only he knows us individually, and also only he knows our full context. So it is much better, I feel, to trust in a third party who is the ultimate God of our lives, to set the boundaries that's appropriate for my life, to set what I should and shouldn't be doing, where I should be going, and what I should be aiming to achieve, how I should help others, etc. And so God is the Creator who creates something out of nothing, is the one I need to turn to. The God who is the ultimate judge, who's got the right to say, well, Sunil, actually, you should have done this and you didn't do that. I am truth. I do know what is right and wrong. I am the ultimate judge. I'm not a figment of your imagination. I have got a valid reference point as the living God to decide what is right and wrong. You need to come up to my standards to do that. And so actually, it's actually a much higher calling than any calling that I would set upon myself. If you look at the Sermon on the Mount, many people would agree that's a calling that we just cannot live up to in our own strength. The challenge of Christianity, actually, it is such a high calling that we cannot live up to it except for the grace of God.
We'll come back again to you, Geshe Tashi, in a moment, because I want to sort of explore as well. Well, are you? I wouldn't call you an atheist because an atheist is something different. I believe you have a belief in something that is supernatural in a sense, but at the same time, it's obviously not in a belief in God in any kind of traditional Christian sense.
Yes.
But before we do that, let me just say, if you're listening and you'd like to get in touch in response to anything you hear on today's program, you're more than welcome to email us. It's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. and I'm happy to read out your emails and forward any relevant ones to our guests. Don't forget, you can get this programme online at premier.org.uk/unbelievable if you want to listen back or let a friend know about it. We're going to continue our discussion, and we'll be bringing in now Dr. Kang San Tan, a former Buddhist, now head of mission studies at Redcliffe College.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, thank you for joining us, Dr. Kang San Tan. You're a former Buddhist, so tell us a little of your story and what happened to you.
Yes, good morning to all. And I grew up in a Buddhist family in Malaysia, and I guess the real turning point was my father passed away when I was 10 years old. And there are three brothers and three sisters in the family. My eldest brother then began his spiritual search. As you know, many Asians say they are Buddhist, but maybe we normally don't really practice Buddhism except as a cultural, occasionally we go to the temple. But my brother then began to be a serious follower, and then he brought the family for teaching and meditation center, and he eventually became a Buddhist monk, and that really helped us from being a secular, a non-practicing Buddhist family to become a family that appreciate the teaching of Buddha, and we begin to go to the temple. But I think when I continue with this search about life after death and reincarnation, and on the other hand, I really wonder what goes beyond this life. Is it the end of the life, or what goes on? And a friend gave me a Bible when I was about 16 years old, without really explaining the Christian story. And I was quite fascinated because I was going to Buddhist temple and growing and learning from my eldest brother. And then in reading the Bible, for the first time, I began to be interested. I think one which both our guests have touched on this concept, that there is this God who is the creator of the universe. And of course, growing up in Malaysia, I think the other influence, maybe not discussed in this program, is that we have a strong Muslim influence as well. And so there's always this tension between my family belief in terms of within salvation within ourselves and seeking enlightenment. But at the same time, there's this strong idea of a one God who is creator of all humankind. So I think that is a long story, but the big change was when I was reading the Bible, I began to be attracted to this idea. Actually, there is someone who's beyond me who will help me to live the teachings of Buddha, and there are many things that's good in Buddhism which have helped me, and then I began to find this journey moving on towards the idea of God.
So in a sense, you wouldn't deny that there is value in the teachings of Buddhism, but you didn't feel you were able to, in some sense, really implement them in your own power, in the same way that Sunil was speaking of.
Yes, I think the mistake for many Asian people, you know, or even maybe coming from Western ideas, that these two religions is completely different, and we tend to be very negative about one or the other religion. But as former Buddhists, then when we become Christians, the tendency is to only look at there's nothing good in other religions. But I think it's a long journey for me to begin to. Initially, I thought, everything, I have to let go of everything that Buddha had taught me. But as I mature, I begin to realize that even there are certain similarities, good teachings in both what Buddha had taught Buddhist followers and then what I find in scripture.
I mean, Before we go back to Geshe to for some comments on that, obviously the person of Jesus is quite significant.
Yeah.
I mean, what difference did that make as far as your faith went when you went, as it were, from being a Buddhist to being a believer, a follower of Jesus?
It's almost like a longer journey of the woman of Samaritan, where Jesus initially was just a religious teacher. And I think as I grow in my understanding of the gospel, I begin to realize that this Jesus is more than just a religious teacher. And then I begin to realize that he offered his life on the cross and he offered this way of salvation. And I think that is where the significant difference. But then I continue to look to the Buddha for some of the teachings in understanding. But I think that the clear distinction would be Jesus then became not only Lord, but the very one who have given me a new life.
Coming back to you, Geshe Tashi, what Kang San referred to there is salvation, is the idea of Jesus forgiving our sins, and this is the way in which we're restored, given new life, etc. I mean, would those concepts be, not part of the language of a Buddhist in terms of forgiveness and salvation and that kind of a concept?
Oh, no. Clearly, there is a concept of salvation or liberation. And also, there is a tremendous teachings. Forgiveness in Buddhism. Here, Dr. Kansen very clearly demonstrated, when he explained his family, within the humanity, there are many different mental dispositions. Some people want this kind of thing, some people want that kind of thing. Not just the ordinary things, but also in the spiritual path, and that's clearly demonstrated by the history of the Dr. Kenson. And to fulfill these different mental dispositions, this different religious belief is tremendously helpful. Some people really want some kind of supernatural being there who will help you, who will give you everything what you want. And some people, people who follow seriously Buddhist path, that is not the case. What you have to do if you want to seek salvation or liberation or the salvation in Buddhism is very much, cleansing those disturbing emotions, thoughts and behaviors, attachment, aversion, ignorance, motivated by those unhealthy emotions, those unhealthy behaviors. When you are able to free yourself from those unhealthy mental states and unhealthy behaviors, that is liberation. That is salvation in Buddhism. So in that context, Buddha is a special being because he himself trained through that to free himself from those negative emotions.
Would this kind of essentially be the concept of nirvana?
Yes, which is this
sense of being completely free from any kind of negative mental state that sense.
Yes.
And what is it then when a Buddhist does achieve this state? What has happened to them? Is this what you might call the salvation of a Buddhist?
So again, here the salvation of Buddhism, in according to Buddhism, or what you use the term nirvana, and it's quite often translated in English saying liberation. So liberating oneself from these unhealthy mental states and behavior is the what we want to achieve, because at the end of the day, whether you have a belief, any spiritual belief or not, we all want happiness and joy. That's what it is. So that's what we have, all these beliefs and all the things.
What do you make of that then, Sunil? Because in a sense, the Christian journey is also about liberation,
yes,
and about freeing ourselves from unhealthy mental states. That could all be part of the journey.
Yes.
So what's the essential difference?
I think there's two aspects. It's very interesting, as I was just reflecting on what we were saying earlier. If I was to want to become a Buddhist, I could say, well, I'm going to follow my own methodology and I'm going to use my own approach. But actually, Geshe may say, well, actually, Sunil, that's all very well. I'm glad you want to do that. You want to become Buddhist. But actually, you know, let me give you some advice from above, having done this before. So as a third party, he can say, well, actually, Sunil, you can't see it from your perspective, but actually from further, when you're somebody who's got achieved further and further than I would have achieved, I can tell you the following and guide you. And so in one sense, on the one hand, we might appeal to a third party, a higher power like God, not only because we want to, but actually he might be the one that sets the constraints. So in one sense, liberation and salvation isn't defined just from my perspective, from my frame, but from my concept, but actually from the one who defines what is salvation, from the one who defines life even. And so, you know, relying upon my own strength, going to God for salvation, whatever, first of all, I think we've got to say, on whose terms? Do we come to God on his terms, or do we come to God on our terms? Do we want salvation from our perspective, or do we want the salvation that he chooses to give in the way that he wants to give it? So I think that's the first thing that I would say. So in that sense, we've got to go to him, you know, as a third party, as the higher source of who defines our context and our being. You know, what is salvation for us? What do you want us to achieve? I think that's the first thing we need to do. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, he can then set the boundary lines and he can set the path to which we can achieve this liberation from the things that challenge us. And then secondly, I would say that I think we can get preoccupied with our own lives and our own desire for salvation. Because in one sense, that's almost a selfish thing, what I want for myself, my salvation, as opposed to saying, well, actually, I didn't choose the day I was born. You know, I didn't create myself. I can't even choose my context. I mean, most of the time, I can choose how I respond to situations, but in many cases, I can't choose how I get into those situations. You know, if a lorry comes and hits me or hits my family, I didn't make that up. It wasn't my choice that set that into motion. That happened. How I respond to that is my choice. I think we can be too preoccupied with our own salvation as opposed to asking, what does God want of us, having created us and given us life? You know, for example, Justin, you're here, you work for Premier. Presumably you have a manager to whom you're accountable. And in the same way, my understanding of the God who made us and of our life here on earth, we are accountable to the one who made us for the life that he wants us to live, the things he wants us to achieve. So it's not only about my salvation and my freedom from my unhappiness or my challenges, but rather called to a different perspective on the whole of life and the whole of my world to see it from God's perspective, what he wants to achieve even through me. Some things I understand, some things I don't, but in the long term I'll be able to look back and say, well, I fit it into God's picture from my perspective.
Kang San, before you have to leave us in this section, I wanted to sort of ask, at the start of when you were describing your journey to Christianity,
Yes. You
said it was partly that search for, is there life after death, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, in Buddhism, there isn't that same sense of a heaven or whatever we might call it, you know?
Yeah.
But there is some sense of achieving some kind of state.
Yeah.
I mean, what dissatisfied you about the Buddhist way of looking at that as opposed to a Christian one?
I think nirvana is at the end achieving into this higher state of life that takes us out of this current cycle of sufferings, almost a non-self extinction, or not it's a complex understanding. Nirvana is more than that, but I think at the end of it, in contrast to the Christian vision, it goes back to this God whom Sunil was saying, not just sovereign, but this God who has a personal relationship. And I think that is a powerful attraction for former Buddhists to begin to realize the real dignity of humanity, you know, almost as a crown of creation, and that there is this God who not only sovereign, but who is deeply interested, longing for a personal relationship. And I think then being a former Buddhist helped me, because then I do realize that sometimes we talk about salvation as free grace, as if we don't need to do anything. But actually, out of this loving relationship with God, that then I will be changed in my behavior, in my mental state, in my wrong perception. So I think it is a powerful attraction for many Asians from a Buddhist background. I know in the West, more and more people are interested in Buddhism, mm-hmm. and maybe from a more individualistic and agnostic position. But Christianity is really growing in Asia, partly because many Buddhists realize that I can't follow all the teachings of Buddha by my own self. And it is a powerful attraction to know that there's Jesus who could come alongside, not letting me say I have all the answers or I can achieve my own salvation, nor the other extreme that I don't have to do any change in my behavior, in my meditation. But that beauty partnership between God and man, you know, I think that has been a powerful attraction for me.
Very interesting. Thank you for joining us for this section of the program.
Thank you,
Kang San, and all the best with you yes. and your students at Redcliffe College.
Yes, and I want to wish our guest Geshe Tashi, and Sunil.
Thank you.
All the
nice
best
to speak to you.
Yes. Okay. Bye bye.
Thank you so much. That's Dr. Kang San Tan, head of mission studies from Redcliffe College. There. We're just nearing the end of this first half, so we'll get into some of the questions that arise from that, because I think there's a big question there about this whole tension between Geshe Tashi's view of we do it for ourselves and your view that we need help, Sunil, to achieve any kind of sense of liberation. And I'd like to explore what that opens up about our responsibility to God as well in terms of sin and forgiveness and that kind of thing, and whether there's any equivalent in Buddhism or whether that's not the case. So you're listening to a dialogue ranging into a number of areas, but particularly we've been focusing on the concept of a God and salvation and what that might mean to a Buddhist and to a Christian. So do join us again in a couple of minutes' time as we continue our discussion here on the programme that gets Christians and non-Christians talking.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So back to our conversation with a Buddhist and a Christian here in the studio, Geshe Tashi Sering of the Jamyang Buddhist Centre and creator of the Foundation of Buddhist Thought. He's here with me as he discusses Buddhism and Christianity with Sunil Shivdasani. Having trouble with that one, Sunil.
By the end of the programme.
I'll have nailed it. But Sunil, from a Hindu background, but very often engaged in discussions of this kind with people from Eastern backgrounds. And so we've had really interesting sort of thoughts so far, especially as Kang San was with us in the last part of the programme, on what he felt, you know, was the ultimate difference that it made to him being a Christian, while he recognised the value of Buddhist practices and meditations, etc., that he didn't feel that there was, in a sense, enough power behind it himself to make it the difference. I mean, it brings us into the question, and just while we were off air there, Sunil asked you this, Geshe Tashi, but have you achieved nirvana, that state of, if you like, I don't know what you would exactly describe it as, but I guess freedom from...
Yes,
all our men, all the constraints of our earthly ness.
No, I haven't achieved, or I haven't experienced. That's the best term we use. Achieve is something not really good term to use. No, I haven't experienced liberation or nirvana, or free from those unhealthy mental states. Still. Lots of unhealthy mental states there.
If you did experience that, would you then, if you like, become one of those spiritual great
I won't entity? Say it become. It that's not really right words. Here, in Buddhism, the main, the aim or the goal, if you use that term, is really very much purifying those unhealthy mental states and behaviors. And when you are able to do that, then that is what's your goal. It's not something to achieve to somebody,
right,
or to become somebody, not in that sense.
In what sense then would you ever get to achieve that? Is it the work of a lifetime or the work of many lifetimes?
It depends on the person. Some people may experience liberation within one lifetime. That means some people may be able to liberate or separate their minds, their behaviors from those unhealthy mental states and behaviors. Some people may take a few lifetimes. There isn't a fixed time or saying you will experience liberation within one lifetime or a few lifetimes. It depends on the individual person.
And that brings in, obviously, the concept of reincarnation, if we're talking about people experiencing several lifetimes. And in what sense, then, would being reincarnated help you to achieve? I mean, to experience nirvana? Because can you be reincarnated in any living form?
Yes.
I'm just trying to imagine how my becoming a bird or a worm would actually aid this process of liberation.
Yes. The theory of liberation is very much connected with the concept of karma. That means the law of cause and effect. Whatever activities you do, whatever physical, verbal, and mental activities we do, there is a consequence that consequence after that activities. So the reincarnation or your next rebirth is very much depends on what kind of life you're going to have in your next life. It's very much depend on your this lifetime activities.
Right.
If you have positive, constructive lifestyle, positive, constructive in the sense of less those destructive emotions, attachment, aversion, and ignorance, and less those destructive behaviors that we usually call positive, constructive. If you live your life in that manner, your next life will be a fortunate rebirth, like the human rebirth or like that. Mm-hmm. And if you live this life in more destructive life, follow your life with those unhealthy mental states, then you will be born in an unfortunate rebirth. So it is very much your present the activities what you do.
Sunil, yes. Any kind of thoughts from you on the way that progresses?
It's not dissimilar from the Hindu idea of reincarnation, which is something that I used to believe in myself, I mean, the question is, it's very interesting because, we believe that if we lived a bad life, we might come back as an animal. It's interesting to note that actually the morality that animals have for one another is very different to human morality. So, for example, we may talk about, as human beings, we shouldn't kill, but actually most animals don't think twice about eating other animals, killing them. We think of the praying mantis and other animals that will quite happily kill, without second thought, should we say, and that they're not on the same morality basis that we have. And so that in itself raises questions about, the whole issue of reincarnation. If we were to become an animal next time, then, for example, the fact that they have a different morality system to human system is something that we need to be aware of. I think my conclusion, really, as I thought about reincarnation, was that, and this is also confirmed by a Hindu who said the same thing to me, is actually, who has actually survived, who has actually achieved it, to live a better life, a perfect life. Even Tashe, from 13 to 16 years at becoming a monk, etc., with all his hard work and his tremendous effort, which is so commendable, even he hasn't achieved the goal of enlightenment from his own, as he was saying. But he's hoping in the future lives that he might achieve it, through reincarnation. Whereas what's available through the God of the Bible is the promise not of us, but of Jesus, saying that, whoever comes to me, I will not turn away. Whoever relies upon me, I will raise on that last day. So by depending on a third party, on an outside greater personality than ourselves, we've got the opportunity, rather than depending on what may happen in a future life, a guarantee that is available now. I have experienced the living God now. I have seen answers to prayer now. Not that I'm not a great person. I'm not depending on what I may have achieved, which again also means I don't have to depend on pride. Because if I have to achieve something, then that invariably is a route for an opportunity for pride. But by depending on a third party to resource me, to enable me to be saved, for want of a better term, then actually that gives me a humility that recognizes that I can do nothing apart from God's grace. So you know, the whole issue of what reincarnation requires comes into question as well from that perspective.
And in that, you know, what that means as a Christian to need the grace of God, it is about the forgiveness of sins, about forgiveness of the things we have done that have failed God.
Yes.
I mean, it occurs to me again, though, that that's going to be a very strange concept from
of course.
Buddhist point of view.
Yes, yes.
Because as far as you're concerned, presumably, Geshe Tashi, anything where we are saying, I needed God to do this for me, to bring me into relationship with God, to restore me, yeah, that all sounds too much like you're depending on a kind of outside helper.
Not only dependent on outside, there's somebody who hasn't, you know, who hasn't experienced anything about human experience, what we are experiencing, and seeking he will help us. But also there's this difficult concept saying if you accept him as a God, he will help you. He will protect you. He will take you to salvation. If you don't accept him, you will be in hell. That's a very difficult concept. You know, almost, you know, saying if you agree with me, I will give you everything what you want. If you don't agree with me, you know, you will be in a very disaster situation. You know, say that I don't know very much about Christianity, but there is this kind of very general concept, isn't it? If you don't believe God, you will be in hell.
Well, what do you say to that, Sunil?
I think the things one needs to recognise is the Buddhist alternative is that if you don't achieve nirvana, and Tashe with his, you know, 16 years working to become a monk, and even since then as a geisha, effectively a professor, you know, a tremendous achievement, and we need to respect that and honour that and recognise that. It is a tremendous achievement, what Tashe has achieved. But even he says he's probably going to come back in another life. So in one sense, he's stuck in the, for want of a better term, the prison of the cycles of births and rebirths, not knowing what his future is. So, you know, some Hindus have said to me, well, in one sense, isn't that a greater hell? I think also, apparently I'm told that the concept of a God of love is actually only from the God of the Bible. If you look at Islam, if you look at other religions, you won't have a concept that God is a God of love, but more of a God of judgment, a God of authority and power, but without inherently a God of genuine compassion for his creation. And so, if we accept the one, we shouldn't be surprised if God also chooses to define another, you know, heaven and hell. If we come to God on his terms, then we must come to him and allow him to give the boundary lines. So if the Bible, if Jesus himself and the Bible talks about heaven and hell, then we can't just say, well, I accept this, I don't accept that. We've got to be saying, okay, if you're the definer of my existence, I come to you on your terms, and you've got the right to draw a boundary line, you know, for whatever that means.
Isn't that you know, belief saying yes, God set the boundary. So who set the boundary? We don't know who that person is. We have no idea. We have just there's somebody saying there's a mighty God or you know supernatural being, but in reality, it is just pure belief, pure faith.
But
within that faith, there's no understanding who he is, what he is, and where it's come from, what is the origin. And all those questions are not addressed properly. Those questions are addressed simply believe there's a supernatural being called God, have all the authorities. I think it will be helpful for certain people, but for certain people, that not addressing those questions is not that helpful to overcome, you know, for example, attachment, aversion, ignorance. No doubt those are the most destructive individually and collectively within the society. You know, that's what we are, I think, suffering or that having difficulties individually and collectively. It is not somebody give us, you know, these are the good thing you do it, these are the bad thing, you don't do it. It's very much our own mental states are really the creator of good or bad, not really somewhere outside there to give us heaven and hell, don't you think?
It's interesting because on the one hand you say that the Christian understanding is from faith and belief, and yet you have tremendous faith that you will come back in another life.
No,
and that you have tremendous faith that you might achieve nirvana in this life.
Or you have tremendous belief that you will come back.
I mean, where is this substantiation that we will come back in another life, you know, as an animal or as a stone or as a tree? Is that not also a whole faith system, just as the Christian? And I accept that, you know, the Christian system is a system of faith, but I think actually there are many things in life that we rely on before they've been confirmed. Even when I start my car in the morning, I turn the key before I know it's going to work. It is actually an act of faith. Mm. So faith is not a problem, as long as you know what the boundary lines that you're dealing with.
Not a problem. The problem here is not addressing the question properly. That's the problem. You know who that is.
Yes.
Where it's come from.
Okay.
You know, so that is the problem, not addressing the questions properly. So now, if you look at the natural world, how they come into being, tremendous evidence they all come into being through the causes and conditions, not by the supernature. That's clearly demonstrated.
On the contrary, actually,
you know, if you look at that.
Well, the Buddhist
concept of rebirth is very much based on natural process.
Yes.
If you sow the seed and give all the, you know, needs to grow, it will grow. If you don't have the seed,
it will
not grow.
Oh, that's the
natural process.
Yeah, I guess what we're saying is that my understanding is that the God is the one who's actually created that natural process. Mm. So, for example, I mean,
so who create God?
Yeah.
That's the question we always ask. That's not addressed properly.
I think that the issue is actually. That's a very valid question, who created God? But I think we're not in a position to actually answer that question.
That is the problem, what I was asking. Yeah. That's the problem, not addressing that question. Who created God?
But having said that, from our perspective, because...
And that's a pure belief, isn't it?
Presumably, though, you believe we came from somewhere. Did we pop into existence out of nothing, the universe, the life?
We come into existence through the process of causes and conditions. Our body come into existence through those substances, our parent substances.
But it must all ultimately be the result of one cause, presumably, that there has to be a defining starting cause.
No. There isn't a one cause.
If you
look at the individual...
But can there be cause and effect that goes back infinitely? I think.
That's the Big Bang, isn't it?
The Big Bang is this universe. This universe come into being through the Big Bang theory.
Right.
There are millions of universes.
But then you've got no evidence for that. So you're saying, isn't that just your faith?
No. Evidence. It's getting clearer and clearer.
I don't think so.
Aren't there billions of universes?
Well, we have no evidence there are billions of
scientifics.
Universe.
We're finding more and more universes.
Tashi, the scientific perspective is yes, there's more than one universe, but actually...
Big Bang theory is just this universe.
No, it isn't. The Big Bang theory is that everything had to start from something. No, that's the point. This is an expanding universe. My understanding is that everything came... There's one of three or four what we might call clues towards God, as Tim Keller would refer to in his book, Reason for God. Mm. One is, you know, what caused the ultimate start? Mm. There must have been an outside party. Another is that if you look at even our universe, there are certain factors, you know, defining constants like gravity. Mm. And without those particular constants in place, we simply wouldn't have life as we know it.
Mm.
And the chance of that happening is so small, there must be a third party.
It's one of those things where, obviously, I have these kinds of debates with atheists all the time about whether we could have been here by chance or whether there has to be an ultimate cause. Most Christians who are in the area of this area of philosophy would say, if you ask, well, what created God then? They would say, well, that's the whole point. God is the creator. He is the uncreated cause of everything that begins to exist. And for me, I don't think saying to a Christian, well, what created God, kind of really gets you off the hook, Geshe Tashe, in terms of you still don't have an explanation either for our presence
the
here.
The Buddhist explanation is through the dependent and origination. Everything
but then
is dependent
equally ask,
and originate.
What started that off? You
yeah.
know,
I mean,
there's no actual starting point. Why we need starting point? But who starts the starting point?
No, why we need starting point? That's the question. Everything is infinite.
Well, I disagree because I think philosophically it's been shown that there can be no such thing as an infinite number of causes. It's a logical impossibility that things have to start if we're talking about yes. if we're talking about things happening in time.
Yes.
So if you're going beyond time, then we're obviously going to something which is timeless, which is uncaused.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that has to be God. It has to be something external to us. But anyway, this is a kind of a separate discussion, but very interesting that we've gone into that area. Let me just say, if you're listening and you want to comment on anything you're hearing on the programme, once again, our email address is unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And if you want to phone your comment through, perhaps you've got a view on Buddhism or Christianity or some of the thoughts we've been having on whether we, if you like, achieve our own salvation, that sense of nirvana in the Buddhist way of thinking, or whether we do need the third party that Sunil's been talking about, the God who made us to aid us. Do get in touch. Very interesting topics this afternoon that we've been talking about. 08456 52 52 52. Select option 5 if you'd like to get in touch with us here on the programme.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
It's been a fascinating show thus far, gentlemen, and we're already approaching the end of our final section. As we do that, obviously time to kind of think of our summings up, if you like. Let me say, though, that if you want to find out more about Geshe Tashi Sering, do check out the Jamyang website. That's the Jamyang Buddhist Centre at jamyang.co.uk. I mean, you're running a number of seminars, sort of lessons, really, and you do teaching regularly at the
yes.
Jamyang Buddhist Centre. And it's all about Finding Inner Peace is one mm-hmm. of the title of one of them. The Six Perfections, A Guide to Life. So in a sense, you obviously believe that Buddhism is not just a kind of this is internal thing. It's very practical for
mm-hmm.
the world mm-hmm. in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk, for instance, in the one about finding inner peace,
mm-hmm.
you talk about as powerful as negative emotions are, they lack any material substance.
Mm.
Nevertheless, they can drastically affect our lives and the lives of others.
Mm.
You're very much about, as you say, freeing yourself from these negative emotional states.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what's the ultimate purpose of that? What ultimately will that do? Is there any kind of ultimate reason, any kind of goal for that? Obviously, we want to be free of them, but is that enough? Is it just then we're happy and that's the ultimate?
Ultimate reasons goes back to our natural inclination, our natural desire. Naturally, we all, you know, where were you born, which continent we were born, and what time we were born, we all have this natural, nobody taught us, this natural yearning, longing, want to be happy and live in a happy family and happy society. And that's how it is. That's natural what we have. And through the training, following the teachings, is to fulfill that natural feeling, that natural inclination. As soon as we're born, we have that.
You could say Buddhism is the art of learning to be happy,
yes.
ultimately,
yes.
is what it's
you
about.
You can say that.
Not
just individually, but collectively, within the society, within the community.
I mean, does it start, though, is there a sense in which it is individual, but when you become happy individually, that's how it works,
isn't it? If you oneself is not happy, how can you have a happy family? And if there isn't a happy family, how can you have a happy society? It's how it works. Very much a ripple, you know, the fashion. So the first training is to train one's own mind, to make one's own mind to be free from those disturbing emotions.
And some people may think when you say the word happy, well, you know, someone in a war-torn country who is having things, you know, thrown at them that they have no control over, in what sense can they be happy? I mean, are you saying that you can still be happy even in situations which should make you unhappy?
Happy should not be understood in a very materialistic society. What we say, oh, I'm very happy, I went to shopping, should not be understood in that levels of happiness. You know, happiness which we are talking about is happiness, you know, through achieving or experiencing through the reducing attachment, aversion, you know, those unhealthy mental state, those unhealthy behaviors. If we reduce those, even if you live in a war zone, you know, for example, many Tibetans live in Tibet, which has tremendous problems, you know, by the Chinese government. But if you are able to train your mind, you can live in that society, although externally very suppressed and very, you know, everything is controlled. But if you train your mind, you can live happily in that society. So I think happiness should not be defined from the very materialistic manner.
I mean, as a Christian, yes. Sunil, you probably agree with a lot of that.
Oh, yes, contentment is something that, you know, is, I think, very essential for any human being. I think there's a lot of angst in for many people. So to be content in life with what we have in our lives, you know, how we find ourselves, and to appreciate the good things of life, to count our blessings, for want of a better term, I think is essential. And I think, sadly, many Christians, you know, lack in that area. So, you know, yes, we should really prioritize. That is something we need to keep our eyes on, certainly.
So if there is, a shared purpose there with Christianity, of being happy, I mean, is there more to it than that as a Christian?
Yes, I think so. I think contentment is important for me personally, and I think it's very important for all of us to achieve contentment and to find contentment in life and to be grateful for what we've got, what we have. But I think I would go much further in terms of what we're called to as people. I think, you know, God didn't just create us and just say, okay, enjoy yourselves and be happy. But I think there are things he wants us to do in life. For example, to be concerned for other people. For example, it would be great if some of the listeners began to regularly pray for the situation in Tibet and the situation between Tibet and China and how many people in Tibet are suffering. I mean, a country that's on my heart personally is Pakistan. But it would be great if some people from this, you know, radio program took on board the need of the Tibetan people and began to pray for them. And so that's not about a concern for their own personal contentment, but to go much further and to see, the Bible says, talks about the kingdom of God reigning, you know, over the whole of mankind, over the whole of God's creation, i.e. that more and more people are willing to sacrifice themselves with the love of God for other people. They're willing to go beyond their own contentment and their own happiness to be concerned for the lives of other people, to live lives that demonstrate that the God that we worship is God who is great and a God who is good. And that's the character of the one who made us. So I'd say that we're called as human beings to go much further than our own personal happiness. But personal contentment is essential. I would certainly agree with that priority, yes.
We're really almost out of time, gentlemen. So it's been a fascinating discussion today. Thank you both
Thank
for joining
you.
Me.
Thank you.
Geshe Tashi, I hope maybe you'll join us again another time.
Yes, I'm happy
in the
to
future.
Do that. Yeah.
Perhaps we'll come up with another interesting aspect of the differences. But it's been really fascinating to get your understanding of how you see God and our life and all those different aspects. And I hope again, Sunil, that I've learned something. I'm sure you have.
Oh, it's been tremendous. It's been a great privilege to meet you.
It's been a good encounter.
Yeah,
challenging, I think, in different directions. If you're listening again, once again, you're welcome to get in touch. unbelievable@premier.org.uk is the email address.
Thank you for listening to today's Classic Replay on Buddhism, which was first broadcast on the 23rd of May 2009. You can get in touch and listen to more classic shows from our podcast archive at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.